This is WMUK.
I'm Kara LaRance, and I am joined here live in the studio at WMUK by four musicians. It takes four to perform in a string quartet, and we have one of the most exciting up-and-coming young quartets in the studio today. They're called the Verona Quartet, and they're performing tonight at 7:30 at the Kalamazoo Nature Center as part of the Fontana Summer Festival. Welcome, Verona Quartet.
Hi.
Thank you.
Okay, I will get to each and every individual here, but I'd like to start with violinist Dorothy Rowe. Perhaps you could give us an introduction to the group and some of the recent highlights for the group in this last season or so.
Right. So I actually joined the quartet a little later, but the other three, they all met at the Jacobs School of Music at Indiana University, and they were all just studying individually and were put into a string quartet for normal chamber music studies, and they were being coached by the renowned Pacifica Quartet. And I guess the Pacifica Quartet, they saw immense talent and potential in our quartet, and so they really pushed us to do national competitions, and that kind of led us to realize that maybe this is something that we could do as a major career. And and then I joined the quartet a year later and also got to study with the Pacific Quartet. And now we're based in New York, and we're the graduate resident quartet at Juilliard.
Okay, just last week, you know, like 4 days ago, I was talking to another quartet. Very, very similar story. They had they met in school. They were coached by the Juilliard Quartet, and they all started off in different places, now moved to New York. So from where I'm sitting, I see this this something repeating itself, New York seeming to be the base of operations for musicians of all kinds. And maybe we're getting into two big trend issues here, talking about the state of music and quartets and being in a quartet in the modern age. But I can't help but remark on this fact. Do you have anything you can add to that, some context? This is Abigail.
Yeah, I think chamber music is really exciting nowadays, especially for young musicians. It's one of the greatest ways of kind of improving your playing, and it's a great source of innovation. So I think a lot of quartets, we go to New York because it is a hub for art and music, but it's also a hub for innovation. And there are a lot of quartets you'll see are doing really, really interesting programming and some new things and bringing life to music. And that's really, really exciting, I think.
Is that one of the discussion topics when you are obviously all extremely well-trained and really viable musicians in today's day, a lot of categories? It doesn't have to be classical string quartet playing. You can do new music, crossover, all this stuff. As a group, do you get together and talk about directions?
Yeah, absolutely we do. I think also something that we talk about, though, is the amazing breadth of the string quartet repertoire. I'm a violist, so for me, gosh, this is just like the best music in the world for the viola. and it's arguably some of the best music for string instruments in existence. And it's just, there's so much to play. I think when we talk about what repertoire we're picking, we're all excited about every piece that comes up, because every single one has some kind of gem in the repertoire, and we hope, we have the hope and the optimistic expectation that eventually we'll be able to play a great deal of the repertoire over time. So,
Abigail, where did you grow up and get your early training before heading off to Indiana?
Well, so I grew up in Northern California, a town near San Francisco, I specify Northern because our cellist is from Southern California. We have a bit of a rivalry going on. And then Jonathan is from Singapore, and Dorothy is from Nova Scotia.
Really?
Really? That's fascinating.
Any Cape Breton fiddling in your background?
No, none. I'm terrible at fiddling.
It is. It's a completely different mind.
It is. Yeah.
Again, Verona Quartet. It takes the stage tonight at 7:30 in the Cooper's Glen Auditorium at the Kalamazoo Nature Center, which is such a terrific venue. Ice cream will be served at the intermission. I don't know if you guys know that, but...
I did not know that. That's very exciting.
That's been a tradition for since 1980. So, Warren, our Southern Californian member of the Verona Quartet.
Hi.
So we've already gotten into big musical issues and career issues, I guess, for musicians. And I know that's something that you just simply have to focus on, how to identify yourself, how to set yourself apart from other groups. Mm-hmm. What are some of your influences and thoughts on that?
Well, I think where we are right now is the Graduate Quartet in residence at Juilliard is a great place to be for us, as we've been together for, I think, about 3.5 years now. And I think at this point, we're really doing a lot of exploring in terms of what kind of repertoire really suits us. And we have a great opportunity to be able to play often for the Juilliard Quartet and have their influence in our playing. And I think one motto that they've always lived by, and I've heard this about them since they first started, was that they treat new music as if it's old music and old music as if it's new music. And that's really been influential in terms of how we approach any kind of music that we play. And you heard it when, I mean, they were really some of the first champions of the Bartok string quartets, at least here in America. And it's just interesting to think about, because they're so standard nowadays, that back in when they were starting in the 40s and 50s, that was really new music back then. And now it's just so standard. And I think that that's kind of influenced sort of our direction with the repertoire that we choose. We dove kind of headfirst into a project on Milton Babbitt's second string quartet, which is not new music, but it was something that was a bit hard, at least for me, to grasp at first. But I think their kind of direction and influence on how we approach the piece, and to approach it as if it's old music and really already well known by everyone, I think that was one of the kind of really important formative events that happened to us this year.
It must be true that on the shelves are a lot of terrific scores of great genius that got unconvincing or, you know, undedicated performances in their premieres and weren't, that wasn't shown. And then they got left behind. So as it's your job to advocate for new scores and new music and forgotten music as well. Jonathan, may I, and you're from Singapore.
I am. Yes.
Abigail said. So you came to the States for some education, higher college?
That's right. I grew up in Singapore. I was born and raised, and my violin teacher actually was a graduate of the Eastman School of Music and Indiana University. And so I started studying with her. When I made the decision to do music, I think I was 14 or 15. And I applied to a few schools, and I ended up going to Eastman when I was 16. And then I went to Cleveland for my master's degree. And then I went and did some postgraduate work at Indiana, where I met the quartet.
I hear almost no accent of any kind. Did you have a lot of English before you came to Eastman?
Yes. So actually in Singapore, English is the first language, just because there's so many different cultures. There are Chinese, Indians, and Malays all living together in Singapore. It's a very cosmopolitan environment. A lot of Singaporeans do have an accent. I think I've kind of phased it out over the time, because if I do speak in Singlish, which is the national English accent, you probably wouldn't be able to understand me very well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you hit the ground running.
Yeah. When I came from Singapore, actually, it's the first time I'd been in America. I was 16, and most of the college kids were 18 or 19. So it was a really kind of a culture shock to be just thrown into the mix, where every day all you do is music. You know, you have orchestra, you have classes, you have lessons, and I was not very good at theory and had to really try and scramble to get it to the level that everyone else was at. So there were a lot of things I had to really adjust to when I first came, but it was a really great experience. Mm. Yeah,
I'm glad to hear it. I wasn't that good at theory either. I think I'd be much better now that I've absorbed so much music to listen to. I think it should go hand in hand, but at the time I was just like looking at things on a page. Let's go on and talk a little about tonight's program, unless Abigail, you have a sort of look like you wanted to throw something in, or
the program is very exciting. I think it's a program that we really have a strong feeling about. So it's definitely covers that breadth of repertoire that we were talking about. We start the program with a Haydn quartet, Opus 50, Number 1, and Warren can tell you a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of fitting for me, I think, because these Haydn quartets, you know, usually you think that it's really a bit more violin one heavy than other repertoire, but
violin
these quartets...
one heavy. You mean all the melody and good stuff is just in the one first violin,
yes,
and everybody
heavy.
Else just sort of helps her out.
Right, right. I mean, I think we know it's more than that. There's a lot more that goes into it than that. But there are some shining moments for the cello occasionally in this piece. And these quartets of the Opus 50, there are six of them, and they were their subname is the Prussian Quartets. And Haydn and Mozart both wrote quartets, a set of quartets named the Prussian Quartets, and they were dedicated to the King of Prussia at the time, who was an amateur cellist. And you can hear that a little bit more in the Mozart quartets. They were the last three quartets that he wrote. And in the Mozart quartets, there actually are several shining moments where the cello starts the movement off with the melody, and it's actually, some of them are really hard. but Haydn's not, it's not so melodic, the cello parts, but there are a couple nice licks in there for me, so I'm looking forward to playing those. It's really, the one we're playing is in B-flat major, and it's really a lot of fun.
So that's what it's all about, is, you know, finding good cello solos in the repertoire.
That's why I'm in the quartet.
The Verona Quartet performs tonight at 7:30. We have a taste of their performance. This is a live recording in concert that we have. Can you tell me a little bit more about when it was recorded?
Yeah, so the Haydn Opus 50 Number 1 was recorded earlier, later in 2015, in a studio in New York, and it's one of we're very drawn to the Haydn quartets. They're really the core of the string quartet repertoire. He was called the father of the string quartet, so for us, we have to always have a Haydn in our repertoire and have a Haydn in the world, a Verona Haydn in the world. So we love this one.
That's the Verona String Quartet, and if you think that's some studio magic at work, you're wrong. That was recorded in one take. They're performing tonight at that level at the Coopers Glen Auditorium at the Kalamazoo Nature Center. If you just tuned in during that music they played of Haydn, all four members of the Verona Quartet are my guests. Jonathan Ong, violin. I'm sure you play a little viola here and there.
Every now and then, yes.
Abigail Rojansky, viola, Dorothy Rowe, violin, and Warren Haggerty, cello. We'll continue our conversation now, but I wanted to get back to something that that wasn't actually mentioned yet. You said you were talking about last year and being in New York, and I know that you entered the one of the major chamber music competitions and happened to win, which is a great job.
Thank you.
Would you tell us about the experience at the Victor Elmala competition, Jonathan?
Yeah, sure. So actually, our first experience with Concert Artists Guild was at a small concert we did in upstate New York. It was at East Hampton. It was in East Hampton. So we gave a concert with a pianist named Daria Rabotkina, and this was before we had management. Daria was actually an old schoolmate of mine from Eastman. So we played the Dvorak Piano Quintet in the concert. It was in a small museum. And the president and vice president of Concert Artists Guild happened to be at a concert. So they came up to us after, and they invited us to audition at the Victor Elmala competition, which we applied for. And so the competition was in October in New York City. We were already living in New York City at the time, so it made sense to just pop over to the audition venue and play for them. And we advanced to the finals, and after the finals, we were announced as the winners. It's been a really great experience for us because as a string quartet, one of the stages in your career really that helps you to sustain a viable performing career is to get professional management. And CAG has been really helping us, pushing us out to presenters, getting us concerts, giving us a lot of advice on how to promote and present ourselves as a professional quartet. And that's been really invaluable to us.
I'm thinking of the environment at a competition for quartets. All of the entrants would be at very, very high performance levels. We're talking very small, minor gradations of quality or what, you know. So I don't think I could judge such a thing. Can we talk about from... you know, your musicians, from your point of view, when you're watching other quartets and live performances, what are some things that we in the audience can listen for to know, to judge that this ensemble is really performing at a great, great level? Warren.
Yeah, well, this is just a personal feeling, but one of the things that I always really enjoy hearing in a quartet is when it feels like the kind of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Or did I say that right? The sum of the parts. Anyway, they
you
sound
did,
like a great...
The whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Thank you, Kara. Yeah. Yeah. That basic idea. I think that's what's really one of the most beautiful things about a quartet. And we spent so much time together and we rehearse so much. And I think that a lot of that goes into making it kind of a great team effort and kind of bringing each other's levels up to be as high as possible in the moment. And I think that it's one of the greatest ways to kind of work on your teamwork and empathy skills. And I don't know about you guys, but I can hear and I can see in a quartet when they're performing, when they have that in mind and they all kind of put across one idea as one, and they're really unified in their intent and purpose. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Dorothy.
It's interesting that you asked that question because right before Fontana, we were teaching at Indiana University String Academy program. And we actually had to judge a string quartet competition there. And I don't know for the rest of you guys, but for me, it was such a weird backwards experience because I'm so used to being on stage competing. And so to be on the other side of the stage judging these quartets, it really gives you a different perspective. And just like Warren said, you can really tell when the musicians are really communicating as one entity and presenting that idea to the audience. So that was really rewarding.
Conversely, can you also tell when there may be two people competing during a performance or just not agreeing, or saying, no, this is my part is the part that you want to hear. And everyone else is like, no.
Well, you know, sometimes that's part of the fun of the performance is the conversation. There are times when the quartet needs to come together as almost like a fifth body, a fifth voice. that unified kind of sense of expression. But part of the fun of string quartet is the conversation among voices. And, you know, people don't always agree. They don't always get along. And that's, I think that brings a lot of excitement to the performance as well. It's not really ever about proving them that one part is necessarily better than the other, but more just maximizing the kind of character that these composers have written into the music. And sometimes that requires, I don't know, maybe one-upmanship or the idea of challenging your colleagues. I remember hearing a concert of the London Haydn Quartet a couple of years ago, and they really did that to a T. I mean, they had so much fun on stage, having conversations and little musical arguments, and then coming together and agreeing, and that's what makes it fun.
So, the music itself calls for both unity and disunity.
Absolutely.
Too. Otherwise, too much of one thing, you stop listening.
Absolutely.
Well, how interesting. I suppose you have a little more sympathy for the people who have to make the hard choices now.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very difficult decision. And Bartok actually was famous for having said that competitions were not for musicians, they were for horses. And to an extent, that may be true, but they are a very important part of developing a career. And it's also been vital for us in terms of our pushing our development and our growth as a quartet, as developing that fifth voice. There's nothing really better than challenging yourself to perform at the highest level. And that's something a competition definitely does.
One thing quartets often do is travel the world. Is it good to go to other concert halls and play in front of different audiences? Does that help you as musicians?
I think it really does. We've been, I think, in the past few years in Japan, in Australia, in Abu Dhabi, in London, and I think it's really interesting to perform for different audiences, not because they all act differently, but because they all agree and they all act the same way. They appreciate music. They love coming to a concert, enjoying seeing the musicians on the stage. They all come backstage after and congratulate us on a performance well done, if they thought it was well done. But on top of that, getting to experience different cultures, when we were in Abu Dhabi, we realized that music was really not part of their language. They had a very deep tradition of poetry, but not so much music. So we did a small exchange with the Arabic poets, actually. They wrote poems and recited poems to music that we played. So we rehearsed together and we performed it on stage. And to really have that kind of cultural exchange and understand that for these people are listening to our music for the first time, I think that was a really deep growing experience for us, to realize that there are still parts of the world where people have not experienced Schubert, you know, Beethoven, and Ligeti. We played Ligeti there, and they really liked it. So judging by the reactions of audiences around the world, it's really evident that classical music is and will continue to thrive, I believe.
I believe that, too. We've never seen as good musicians as there are today. The training is incredible. We have a competition here for young string players called the Stolberg competition every single year. Mm-hmm. And judges like Glenn Dichterow get up and say, this is not... that we're not seeing the decline of performance and musicianship here. It's mm-hmm. it's really better than he's ever seen. And I know he's not alone with mm-hmm. that. So the musicianship, the ability, the ways that musicians today can absorb and use so many different types and styles of music, very, very exciting. Verona is a city in Italy, referred to in Romeo and Juliet?
Yes, yeah. And a number of other Shakespeare's works as well.
Is it
Two Gentlemen of Verona?
And so it's the sort of romantic association that brings poetry to the name.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There's, we love the idea of cross collaboration of different genres and as we were talking about earlier, innovation in music. And so, we wanted to pay tribute to Shakespeare and to his great works, in our name.
Any secret projects that, you might have on your wish list?
Well, we're definitely thinking about a lot of different kinds of projects right now. At the moment, most of our biggest project has been the expansion of our repertoire. So really exploring the very corners of the repertoire. And tonight we'll actually be playing Webern's Six Bagatelles, which is, as Jonathan mentioned, there are many places in the world where they haven't heard Schubert and Beethoven. But a lot of times people, even who are very familiar with the classical canon, haven't heard, some pieces that are really core to the repertoire as well. And the Webern is one that might be a bit of a surprise for people. It really hits that juxtaposition between the exploration of atonality that was going on in the early 20th century and the height of Romanticism. Brahms on, on Energizer batteries. So.
Yeah, I have heard these performed live in a very large concert hall. I seem to remember phrases in space and space between them, almost like conversational, as if the room's answering back a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
But and in a more intimate setting, like we'll be up close with you guys. It might even be amplified that way. Mm-hmm. We're waiting to hear more. Warren.
The Webern has been a lot of fun for us to kind of undertake as a project because it's sort of a direct response to how huge music had gotten in recent years before Webern wrote the piece. I mean, think about Mahler symphonies that were an hour and a half long. Not that that's a bad thing, but he was kind of going in the exact opposite direction. So for us to work on it, and we've been working on pieces like the Beethoven Quartet and like Schubert Death and the Maiden that are, again, very expansive, very, very large pieces. And to work on the Webern is a lot of fun because you can really afford to just go in depth into one bar and figure out exactly how everything, should fall into place and how it should sound. And if you're working on Death and the Maiden, you can't exactly do that with one bar and expect to get through the piece within 5 years. so I think it's really a different muscle to exercise to work on a piece that's 3.5 minutes long and each of the movements is 30 seconds. And performing it takes a surprising amount of mental endurance in a way and focus that's, I think, unlike anything that we've experienced with other pieces.
So you can be more tired after working on Webern Bagatelles than after a whole Beethoven
in a
movement.
Way, yeah.
because there's so much expressiveness within each moment.
Yeah, I really think there is.
Yeah, Webern was a very romantic composer. His early works, one of his earliest works we just played, Langsamersatz, short movement, and it's just so beautiful, it's so lush. And when we first started the Six Bagatelles, we thought, well, this is very different. But after a little bit of investigation into what's behind the page, we realized that there's so much romanticism going from one note to the next. You know, in the span of a second, there's just this huge explosion of expression. And I think in a way, because the piece is shorter, because it's only 30 seconds long, to really pack all that expression into the span of a 3-minute piece takes so much focus. It's like trying to sprint in a 100-meter dash versus a marathon. It expends the same amount of energy because your focus is different. I think with Webern, it's like trying to pack a marathon into a 100-meter sprint. Something like that. You have to just take everything that you know about music and just compact it into just these few minutes. Yeah.
Well, I have the members of the Verona Quartet in the hot seat here at WMUK discussing all aspects of music and performing in a quartet. So let's give them a break. And, well, just in a moment, as soon as I ask you to set up this Beethoven performance that we have from a recent recording, a live performance once again.
Yeah, so this Beethoven was recorded a little bit earlier than the Haydn that you heard before. But it was also a piece. This is a piece that we hold in our repertoire today, actually. A real standard, again, as Beethoven art. But this is the second of three quartets, of his middle quartets, Opus 59, number 2, the Razumovsky Quartets.
That's a live performance by the Verona Quartet, exquisitely played Beethoven, and you will hear Beethoven tonight on their performance in Kalamazoo at the Kalamazoo Nature Center. I'm speaking with Jonathan Ong, Abigail Rojansky, Dorothy Rowe, and Warren Hagerty, all four members of the Verona Quartet. Abigail mentioned in the last break that as the quartet is young, having been formed in 2013, one of the major focuses right now is expanding the repertoire, really exploring everything string quartet literature has to offer. And I know that's so much. All the Beethoven, all the Haydn, all the Mozart, all of, then you get into the Romantics and then the 20th century with Bartok and Webern. Mm-hmm. How does it feel? Is it good to have coaches at this point, or was it good as you recently, or are you still associated with the Juilliard String Quartet?
Yes, we are. We are mentored by the Juilliard String Quartet as the graduate resident string quartet at the Juilliard School, and we will be for one more year. But we're always developing our own voice and our ability to coach ourselves. That's the most important thing. And yeah, and we're definitely expanding the repertoire under the mentorship of the Juilliard Quartet. As Warren mentioned, we played a Babbitt String Quartet this year, which was very new for us. But we also, there's so much new quartet repertoire being written, and we're lucky enough to have a few wonderful collaborations. We've already had a couple pieces written for us. We performed earlier this summer a quartet that was dedicated to us by Attar Arad, viola faculty at Indiana University. And this coming February 2015, we're going to be 2017. I'm really trying to turn back the clock here. 2017.
I understand that. Mm-hmm.
We're going to be presenting our Carnegie Hall debut as a part of the Concert Artists Guild series at the Weill Hall. And on that concert, we were awarded a BMI prize, which is making possible a commission for us by a composer named Michael Gilbertson. He's a fantastic composer based at Yale. And so we're very excited about that. And we've been doing quite a few premieres. We have a performance coming up of a California premiere of Richard Daniel Poor's clarinet quintet with Bert Hara, a couple of other collaborations, and performance at Alice Tully Hall. So we're very excited for this coming year.
I think just this last May was your debut at Lincoln Center.
Yeah, we performed at Alice Tully Hall as Lisa Arnold Fellows, and we'll be giving another performance at Alice Tully Hall in May of 2017, again, as Lisa Arnold Fellows. So we're very excited for that. We also have another concert at Alice Tully Hall, but that one is going to be actually a collaboration with Orion Weiss, amazing pianist, and Cho Young Lin as well.
So. Orion Weiss rings a bell because here in Kalamazoo is the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival.
Oh,
a Gilmore Young artist, maybe 10 or 12 years ago now, but yeah.
That's fantastic.
Terrific pianist. Gosh, it's just like everywhere you look, great new music, good collaborators. It's about concert halls and audiences that are probably a big concern. How do we, with the music at such a high level, where do we get audiences to come in and be as enthusiastic as you are?
Well, I think CAG, the Concert Artists Guild, they have a great connection, great connections and great contacts in the world of presenters. For example, Fontana Arts, they're a great presenter, and they've gotten such a great audience base in Kalamazoo itself, and halls to work with, performing at the Nature Center. We just had our rehearsal there yesterday, and such an interesting venue. It's a really nice hall, very intimate setting, which is the way chamber music is meant to be played. And I think for chamber musicians, the truth is, because we are such a small group, we're not an orchestra. An orchestra is 100 people, and you have to play in a concert hall or an outdoor park. But a string quartet can really play anywhere. We've played for private house concerts.
Yeah.
And chamber music, you know, just the idea of it being in a setting where it's more intimate, smaller, so that the audience can be closer to the quartet. I think that's what makes quartets so much more mobile, in a sense. We can perform anywhere. And for audiences of any size, it's...
I like the concept I'm hearing lately of people reclaiming this idea of salon music or having this music in your home and hosting performances. That's more and more happening among classical and jazz artists and audiences. If you want to feel more ownership of the music you love, that's one great way, perhaps, to support a young group like the Verona Quartet.
Yeah. Have you heard of the organization, Group Muse?
Group Muse.
It was an organization, I think it was formed in Boston by a musician who studied at the New England Conservatory, and basically it's an organization where anybody can offer up their home to give house concerts, and it's a place, an opportunity for musicians to perform. And I think it's expanded not only in Boston, but in New York, also in Bloomington, Indiana. So I think that helps expand the audience. Yeah.
And Fontana fans also know that this concert presenting organization is one of the finest at making concerts seem like intimate home mm-hmm. concerts, especially during the summer with the ice cream break.
Yeah.
and the beautiful, beautiful setting of the Kalamazoo Nature Center, where you can simply walk in from an amazing observing deck, yes. having overlooked the woods and heard the birds, and then walk in and be seated for some terrific music. By the way, Fontana can be found online at fontanamusic.org or 382-7773. I have a little Bartok queued up here from the Juilliard String Quartet, your mentors, but just want to go around the room again for final thoughts. And I'll start with you, Warren, if that's all right.
Yeah, I think we're really excited about this concert tonight. I think we had a chance to observe the space and play a little bit in Glenn. And it's, I think, as we were all saying about chamber music and kind of the nature of it, it's really exciting when we can play for such an intimate setting, and especially this music and the Bartok, which has so many intimate moments, and the Webern, and they really all do. And I think that's we're just excited to kind of have an audience that's able to be up close and personal with our kind of our performance and our ideas.
Dorothy, what are you thinking about?
I don't know. Not much. I mean, Warren worded it so well. I think the program that we have tonight is it has a great overview of the quartet repertoire. I mean, we have the Haydn, that is the most traditional of all quartet music, and then we have the Webern, which is really exciting for us because, like Abigail said before, a lot of music lovers have not heard it before. So this will hopefully be a great experience for them. And then the Beethoven, it's one monumental quartet pieces, and then the Bartok as well. So
Abigail?
Well, you were talking about how an audience could get as excited about a concert as we do. And I can draw words from Dorothy's mouth, because a couple of days ago she was talking about something, and I think it's really important, which is that it's just exceptional the way that an audience member is really a part of the performance. And they're there at the moment that the music is being created. And once it's gone, it's ephemeral. It's gone. It's over until the next performance. So the audience should know that they're not just static observers of what we're doing. They are a part of our performance. They are helping to create the music in the moment. So I hope that people will be excited to be a part of that.
Well, good luck, Jonathan. That was so well said.
Well, I'm just looking forward to the ice cream. It's really an experience for us as a young professional quartet to be able to start traveling around the country and around the world and give performances in all different places. And Kalamazoo is our first, it's our first time in Kalamazoo, our first time working in Fontana. So I feel like as a young quartet, we really treasure every single experience that we have in every single city and town we go to. So we hope that the audience will join us in this experience as we perform at Fontana Arts.
You know, you'll hear stories from audience members about how we all grew to love the Pacifica Quartet through 4 to 5 performances over years. And we can start anew with the Verona Quartet tonight. Thank you very, very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank
it's a pleasure.